I heard somebody say thank you. Thank you. You're welcome. Is anybody else bothered by the stray plug on the stage? Anybody else have OCD about? Okay. All right. Anyway, I'm procrastinating. Let's get down to it. It's great to see you here today. I'm going to start by telling a story from one of these books by Tosha Silver. It's a story about the author, Tosha Silver, who was in a cafe one time in New York, in Tribeca, which is kind of an artsy area of southern Manhattan. And she was there, and she was minding her own business, enjoying a cup of coffee and writing. And all of a sudden, this man stormed up to her and started yelling at her. And he was calling her Gloria, and he was using foul language, expletives, and saying all of this horrible stuff to her about what a bad ex-wife she was, and how he couldn't pay her any more alimony, and she was just an evil person. And finally, she took off her glasses, and he said, "Oh, you're not my ex-wife. Oops, my bad." And he walked away. Tosha Silver's response to that was, "Dang it, I love New York." She said that it was easy to not take it personally because his rant, since it had nothing to do with her, really seemed almost entertaining in a way. But it's not always that way for us, is it? Sometimes when somebody is ranting at us, or somebody does something offensive, or somebody is... I learned last night in a thing I attended that you're not supposed to say difficult anymore, you're supposed to say challenging. In this thing, I was like, what about obnoxious? Where does that fit in? If somebody is any of the above, sometimes we do take it personally. And we act in a way that does not support the highest and best in ourselves and in others. So I'm hoping today that we're going to navigate some of that and get some more insight about what that's really about and how to do things differently so that we can have a sweet and beautiful life that we deserve, the life of oneness that we already have, but sometimes we're just wearing blinders and we can't see it. Joel Goldsmith said that we are here to demonstrate the infinite nature of our being, and George Gurdjieff said that we thank anybody who gives us the opportunity. We are here to demonstrate, this is the marriage of Joel Goldsmith and George Gurdjieff. Okay, never mind. Anyway, we are here to demonstrate the infinite nature of our being, and we thank anyone who gives us the opportunity. Because the opportunity doesn't always come through sweetness and light. It often comes when we're up against something. You know, unconditional love is meaningful when there are conditions to overcome. And it's the same thing with demonstrating the infinite nature of our being. If we're in a situation where it's challenging to demonstrate the infinite nature of our being, then that challenge makes us even stronger. The idea of nothing personal, a lot of authors have talked about this, but I, of course, think of The Four Agreements, which is a wonderful book, and they say that we shouldn't take anything personally. We don't need to take anything personally. And the author's point is that often what people see or what they say is based on a series of their perceptions and projections that we all have an opinion about what reality is, and sometimes those opinions and realities don't sync up. And that also that there is a core within us that is impervious to the opinions of others or what have you. So there, yes, there is that. But then, on the other hand, in Science of Mind, we say, this denomination, we say that we create everything that happens to us. That we are responsible for creating our version of reality. And that feels kind of personal. So which is it? Do we not take anything personally? Or do we take everything personally? The answer is yes. Of course. I'll explain to you what I think that means in this situation. In another one of Tosha Silver's stories, she talks about the exalted barista. Does anybody here know an exalted barista? Love baristas. They're so good. They're so cool. It's a hard job, too, from what I've heard. But anyway, this particular barista was in her 20s, and she was already just a guru of vast and powerful wisdom. Because Tosha Silver would go and drink coffee in the coffee shop where she worked, and she would see this woman put up with all kinds of offensive behavior. And she saw this man just completely tear her up because he had gotten soy instead of skim. Now you know how challenging that can be, right? That will really set anybody off. Not really. But Tosha Silver said that no matter what happened, this woman, this young woman in her 20s, was just so kind and so gracious and so compassionate to anybody that was giving her a hard time. And finally, after observing this a lot, she sat down with her and she talked with her and she said, "Carmina, how do you do it?" And Carmina said, "Well, I learned early on in life that I really can't control anything. I can't control the opinions of other people, the opinions that they have of me or the opinions they have of my service. But I can absolutely control how I respond to them. And so I decided to become a master at that." And then she said, "I have to tell you, the local ones give me the best workout." And that's really what I think the truth is of that balance between we don't have to take anything personally, but we also create what happens to us. Gary Simmons, I think, said it really well. He was a Unity writer, and he said that what people say to you is all about them, right? You've heard that phrase from Terry Cole Whitaker, what you think about me is none of my business, right? What people think of you or say of you is all about them. But of course, your response and your responsibility, hyphenated word, responsibility, ability to respond in a kind and compassionate manner, that's all up to you. Up to us. It takes a slight shift in perception. It takes spiritual work, but it can be done. I have a story about a situation that happened in my life, and it was going to be about how someone had done me wrong. And as I was thinking about this last night and working on it, I started saying to myself, I'm not sure that the person really did me wrong or if I did them wrong. So I'll let you be the judge of that. Many of you who attend here regularly know that my husband and I have about 30 animals. A lot of them are birds and fish. But we have two dogs and a cat. And I often work at home. I often write at home. And I often write in bed. And I get under the covers, and I'm usually wearing something that should not be seen by the public eye. And the biggest part of that is that it takes a lot to get our dogs to settle down. They are very active. They are Hungarian pointers, Vizslas. And any little noise, any little disturbance, they just go crazy. They go loco, as Carmina said. So this one day I was sitting in bed, I was writing, I was wearing something not very nice, and I had the dogs perfectly settled. And when the dogs are settled, I don't even get up. If I need a drink of water, I say, forget it. The dogs are going to get riled if I get up. I got to finish this. Well, the doorbell rang, and the dogs exploded into action, and I quickly put on something that I could see people in, and I went to the doorbell, and I slid out so that my dogs, Cujo and Satan, wouldn't get the the person at the door. It's not their real names. It's their alter egos. Why does my mic keep popping? Okay. Anyway, I got out the door, and it was this man who had counted the solar panels on our roof, and he felt that we needed some more. We have a sign on our door, near our door, that says, "Shh, dog sleeping, no soliciting." And he didn't see it, so I pointed to the sign, and I said, "You know, I know you're trying to sell me something." He's like, "Oh, no, I'm not trying to sell you something. I just need to ask you a question. How many solar panels do you have? Would you like some more?" So it went like that, and I'm afraid that I was not very kind to him. So he was offensive to me, but I was offensive right back to him. Now, fast forward just a little bit. He went on his way. And I'm same scenario. I'm lying in bed. I'm not dressed very well. The dogs are there. I'm writing a sermon, actually. The doorbell rings again. The dogs explode. I sneak out the crack to avoid Cujo and Satan getting out and biting the person. And it's the Girl Scouts. And they had cookies. My favorite thing. And I'm not allowed to eat cookies right now, but I knew I could buy them for the church, and I could buy some for my husband, and then I made an extra donation, and then I gave them some of these heart pins. I was so nice to the Girl Scouts because they were cute and innocent. But do you get this? Same exact situation going on in the physical world, but my reaction, my response, was not kind to the first one and kind to the second one because they were Girl Scouts and they were cute and they were innocent. And they had cookies, but... And so I took that in when I realized that I had been unkind to this other gentleman and started thinking about his innate innocence. Is it possible that somebody who is bothering us, somebody who seems to be getting in the way of our agenda, somebody who wants us to meet their agenda where they are, somebody who is offensive or challenging, even obnoxious, is it possible that underneath they are like a young Girl Scout or a Boy Scout with deep, sweet, profound innocence? For all I know, this guy might have had a family that he was trying to support, and this is the way he knew how to do it. And so I apologized in my heart to him, and I vowed that next time I would do better. And sure enough, Spirit tested me. You get the scenario, in bed, dogs, pajamas, blah, 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 squeak out the door. Somebody wants me to vote for somebody. You don't have to say yes if you don't want to. I just said, thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. And she went on. That's all it took. That's all it took. I didn't need to get all riled up, did I? Right? Okay, so you may say that a door-to-door solicitor is one thing, but the people in my life are different. They are really, really challenging, and there's this going on and this going on, and my family and my employer and my employees or whatever it is. Not you, Annette, sorry. I think the same principles apply. For whatever reason, I think because I was born to be a people pleaser, Spirit has put me in many, many situations where I don't get to people please. I worked in psychiatric hospitals when I lived in New York and when I lived in LA, including the prison at Bellevue and the homeless unit at Bellevue in Manhattan. I worked at a medical customer service company where people, if their device wasn't working, they would call up and they would be so upset and they would yell. I also trained a lot of employees where sometimes they weren't working out and we would have to let them go. And we had what I would call blame the trainer firings, where they would just be spewing venom about how we hadn't done a good enough job at training them. And then I came to the church. Now the church is actually quite easy compared to all of that, and there's not really. I mean, it's a church with people in it, and whenever there are people in a place, they get on each other's nerves. Sometimes, have you noticed? Right, it happens even here in this center of love, where we be love, share love, serve love. But maybe getting on each other's nerves and working through it is part of love. And I have to say that serving at this church, where I am sometimes called to be a target for people's anger, it's usually by upholding policies, that has taught me a lot about being compassionate in the face of adversity and in the face of someone that seems against us or seems against me and not taking it personally. So I want to share with you three principles that I think apply that hopefully you can use in your lives with the people who seem like they are against you, and in your tendency to take things personally. The first one is transaction. Have you noticed that a lot of our relationships, particularly when there's adversity going on, when there's conflict going on, that they are very transactional? Meister Eckhart talked about this. I just got a little nervous about quoting Meister Eckhart with the Meister Eckhart ATM sitting right there, who can just push a button and he spits out Meister Eckhart quotes. But basically, he suggested that Meister Eckhart suggested that we alleviate transactional consciousness because it keeps us out of the kingdom of heaven, the inner kingdom of heaven that is happening right now. And what I think that is transactional about relationships is that, let's say that you're having an argument with someone. They want you to be different. So they are trying to change you, and they will not be happy unless you change. But at the same time, you are trying to change them and not make them want to change you. That's a transaction. What if there is something beyond transaction? Nipun Mehta, one of our good friends here, who works with a lot of Gandhian principles, says that we are called to move from transaction to trust. So what if, instead of getting transactional and trying to make the other change or trying to make the other person be nice to you, what if we just surrendered, offered the conflict to the divine, and then just trusted that the words would be provided for us? You know, so many of us want to cave in because we want that person's approval. How many of us learned that unless we were giving people what they wanted, then we were a bad person? Yeah. If we surrender that, a lot of that gets taken care of for us on the inside. I have been known to say to people, I know you're yelling. I know you want to keep on yelling. Please know that I hear you, but I still have to do what's best for the center. What is to stop any of us from doing that with somebody who is upset with us, saying, I hear you. However, I need to do what is best for me in this moment. Is that compassionate? Is that kind? Is it loving? Absolutely. Absolutely. Does it work? Well, they may keep yelling, but you know, you're already in a place where you're grounded. And the goal is not to change the other person. The goal is to stay centered within ourselves. So I guess that it's up to us as to whether or not it, quote unquote, works. And it works through offering. If fears come up, if adversity comes up, we just offer it to the divine and allow something that is greater, the great self that is within us, to do the work through us and keep us poised and balanced. The second principle that I'd like to share with you is feelings. Chris Kelkar shared this in class the other night, and he gave me permission to talk about it. In these books that we're studying right now, they suggest that we stop complaining. Yeah. That we stop complaining. And often when somebody seems against us, isn't there a huge tendency and a huge urge to want to complain about them? To their face or behind their back, whatever. In ourselves, that dialogue that's going on in your head, what I should have said, you're making up stuff that they said, and then you're figuring out your response, your pithy response that puts them in their place and changes them. All that complaining. And I hear some chuckles of recognition here. Chris suggested that sometimes we complain when we're trying not to feel something. So what if we're catching ourselves complaining about someone or trying to change them, but we're doing so because we don't want to feel what they are bringing up in us? That is often what happens in conflicts, is that we are afraid to feel what is coming up in us, so we do something else instead. We complain, or we push back, or we get defensive. With the salesman guy, the solar salesman guy, I actually looked at that. I was like, what is it that I don't want to feel? What did I not want to feel? I know I wanted to feel self-righteous and indignant and disdainful. Got that down pat. However, that was covering up something that I didn't want to feel. And what I didn't want to feel was scarcity and shame. Scarcity, feeling like this guy wants me to buy something. Do I have the money? I don't know. We just did this. We have other things to do, you know? Feeling that scarcity, that distress of scarcity that purrs under so many of our relationships and our transactions. but also shame, because this guy really wanted me to buy from him. And I like to give people what they want because that means they will like me. They will approve of me. And it even travels into the realm of salesmen. You know, have you ever bought a car and been afraid that you're going to hurt the salesman's feeling, right? Or anything? Yeah, I mean, we move past that. Some people are shaking their heads, but we move past that. There's other things. People want you to do something that you really don't want to do, but you're just afraid that it's gonna hurt their feelings. And if you say no, sometimes they will get defensive and angry and try and make you feel guilty and cry and yell. And you're thinking that you're the cause of all those feelings, but really, again, they are responsible for their feelings as you are responsible for yours. One of my favorite definitions of love that I've extracted from a book and I've added to it is, love means that I care about your happiness. But I had to add an extra line to that, because if I care about your happiness, does that mean that I have to do everything that you want me to do so you can be happy? No. I care about your happiness, however, I am not responsible for your happiness. You are responsible for your happiness. How about that? So it's understanding the feelings that are coming up, the ones that you don't want to feel, and then working with them in a way that is kind and supportive and gentle with yourself, that ultimately translates to you being kind and supportive and gentle with the other person, even if they don't see it. The last principle that I want to invoke here this morning is the principle of peace. Jesus, the Christ, who we consider not the only path to God, but one of our spiritual elder brothers, a wise guru, a wise rabbi, he said, and I'm going to, again, paraphrase this quote, but he said, "Peace I bring to you, my peace, not peace as the world understands it, but peace that passes human understanding. Let not thy heart be troubled. Let not thy heart be troubled." Are you cringing? Okay. I sort of merged several quotes there. Let me not apologize for merging quotes. How's that? Okay. "Peace I bring to you, not as the world knows peace." In my observation, I have seen that sometimes we feel that we can fight our way to a deeper sense of peace. That we can bully someone into what we want, and then there will finally be peace if they're giving us what we want. And the vice versa is true as well. I can't feel peaceful until you change. So we change in order to keep the peace. That's peace as the world knows it. But the peace that passes human understanding is quite different. This is a stretch probably for some of us, as it's a stretch for me. But the more and more I study non-duality, non-dual teachings, I keep coming back to this phrase where folks will say, non-dual teachers will say, the self that is separate does not exist. And that means that the self that is offended does not exist. The self that is offensive does not exist. It is a plethora of perceptions and projections that have been spun into a role that we are currently playing, but it is not real. An example of that is to think of it as like an actor or an actress. You know, you've probably all seen Romeo and Juliet. Romeo and Juliet, that's the gay version. We actually had two bunnies that were gay, and we called them Romeo and Juliet. That's why I said that. Yeah, I always say, like, when people say it's not natural, I'm like, oh, please, you have not met my rabbits, please. Yeah, Romeo and Juliet. Okay, so you know that Juliet dies. It's a story that Shakespeare has made up about this character, and there's all kinds of investment in the character, and the actor playing the character plays the role and then stabs herself at the end, right? That's how she dies, right? Oh, happy dagger. She stabs herself at the end, and then she dies on the stage. The false self, the character, has died. But the real Juliet gets up, shakes herself off, and says, yeah, I did that well tonight. Let's go to a coffee shop, right? We are like that. And if you want another actor or actress, pick something. I sometimes say Ross in Friends, okay? Or Chandler Bing, how's that? We are playing a role that is constructed of all kinds of memories and perceptions and habits. And the real self, that role that we're playing does not exist. The real self is that which is permanent and undying. The real self is love. And so, what if we were to say, when something was coming up for us and we were feeling offended, if we could say to ourselves, the part of me that is offended does not exist. I can still feel the feelings, but I know that they are not real with a capital R. They are relative feelings. And if I feel these feelings and allow them what they are here to teach me, allow them to teach me, and to look at my transactions that I'm making, and then surrender all of that to move into the deeper self that is love, the real self that is love. What if we were to do that? I think that that would change our whole lives, and we would truly appreciate the people that crossed our paths that were difficult or challenging or even obnoxious. We might even enjoy it. How about that? And then some people will say, oh, Bonnie, how can you say that love is the only thing that's real? Well, first of all, I say it because it's true and because I believe it. But I want to back it up with a little quote from our brother, Albert Einstein. This was given to me by a church member named Melissa. I don't know if she's here. But Albert Einstein wrote in a letter to his daughter, when scientists looked for a unified theory of the universe, they forgot the most powerful unseen force. Love is light that enlightens those who give and receive it. Love is gravity because it makes people feel attracted to others. Love is power because it multiplies the best we have and allows humanity not to be extinguished in their blind selfishness. Love unfolds and reveals. For love we live and die. Love is God and God is love. This force explains everything and gives meaning to life. This is the variable that we have ignored for too long. May we release and surrender the idea that we are ignoring love and allow that to be the center focus of our lives as we interact with all beings everywhere. Through this work, we change ourselves, but we also change the world. Let's do that now. Let us pray.